Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
So how about you go ahead and give us a noise for each XFL team.
Dragons, breathing fire. Defenders, yes. The Trojans providing the protection against whatever is going to come your way. The Battlehawks, more than 350 species of birds live right here in the Santa Cruz Valley in the Ring of Fire in the Sonoran Desert. Guardians, okay?
Yeah,
roughnecks, okay?
Roughnecks. No Trojans, by the way.
No, but the Guardians. Guardians are like Trojans. Vipers. Give me some more names.
You covered them.
We got them all?
Yeah, you got them all.
What sport is that?
That's football.
Bill Walton is a treasure and all in on the XFL, clearly. Welcome to Hour 3 on the Score. He's Herb Lawrence. I'm Rick Camp, and we're going to go out to the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. And, you know, on Twitter, seeing what people are thinking about the XFL, and one of the names that I saw popping up a lot, just live tweeting what was going on, is Kevin Boylard from NFL writer for CBS Sports. Follow him on Twitter at 24/7, Kevin Boylard. Kevin, how are you doing today?
Doing well. Thanks for having me on the show, guys.
Well, we appreciate you making the time for us. I guess off the top, just your initial thoughts of getting one day of the XFL in your life.
Well, it was certainly up hard for me. If you're going off of what we saw last year in the AAF, I think the XFL got off to a hotter start. I think it's got bigger names. I think that the quality of play is a little bit stronger. I think that the innovations are a little more interesting. And I think that the overall fever and the hunger for more football is stronger than ever. So I think that the XFL got off on the right foot, and I'm excited to see more of it today.
And speaking to that, you said Raheem Moore. You tweeted out a thing from Raheem Moore saying he loved the AAF. It was a great experience, but it was a little slow, and the XFL felt like real NFL pace, real NFL game. What about you? You cover the NFL. What's your impressions about the actual game that was going on? And if you watch the AAF, why did that fail?
Well, first, I want to give some credence to what Raheem Moore said. Raheem Moore had a pick six in that DC Defenders win over the Seattle Dragons yesterday. And that's a former second round pick of the Denver Broncos, who started a lot of games with the Broncos. And also, as you mentioned, has experience in the AAF and in the XFL, and said that the XFL is definitely closer to NFL game speed. I think that's what I saw as well. I think the biggest thing that held the AAF back, besides not having enough money to run a football league, was the lack of quality quarterback play. And already we've seen in the XFL, there's a couple guys who can play. Cardale Jones for DC yesterday, P.J. Walker for the Houston Roughnecks yesterday was fantastic. And I'm excited to see some of the quarterbacks today. We got Aaron Murray, Matt McGloin, Landry Jones all playing today. So some big names that we should recognize just from the years of watching college and NFL. I think that this XFL league is going to depend on stars and stars that will carry the league forward. And where else do you look other than the quarterback position? So far, it doesn't look like every team has one. As we saw, Seattle didn't really have a good passer, neither did L.A. Now, L.A. has Josh Johnson, who is injured. So, you know, maybe later we see some better quarterback play. But overall, I think that's what's going to drive the league forward.
And I find it really interesting, a lot of the broadcast elements, as well as, you know, we try and see at what point are we going to hit a peak with the NFL and the way it's been broadcasted similarly for a long time. But just thinking about today, even more than Aaron Murray, the fact that we're going to have a mic'd up Mark Trestman and possibly mic'd up Jerry Glanville as well. I don't think it gets a whole lot better for us as observers, especially those in Chicago that survived the Mark Trestman experience, I want to see the man being grown on the XFL level and have us be able to see all of that in real time.
Yeah, I think that part of the allure of the XFL is the, you know, exposure, the level of intimacy that the fan has with the players, with the coaches, with the officials while watching. Now, I think that a lot of times it was good when you get the kicker, for example, yesterday, right after he missed the kick, like, you know, that's an emotional interview. But then you also saw, another player who was interviewed right after he got a personal foul and drops an F-bomb on live TV. So it has its pros and its cons. I also think that when they were, you know, going into the huddles, very cool, very interesting. It's kind of, you know, pulling back the curtain on what goes on inside a football huddle. But also, for example, when they would go to the mic'd up versions of them reviewing the play, that was not very convincing, the review process. And if the NFL were to decide to mic up their officials and their review experts, I think the controversy would be tenfold if they were to pull back the curtain and we were to see it's as unorganized and unofficial as what we saw during an XFL broadcast.
The only problem I have, Kevin, with the XFL is looking to the future. Yesterday, they opened in a soccer stadium that held 20,000, and then they went to Houston, and it's 40,000 there at the TDECU stadium. Today, they're going to the MetLife Stadium, 82,000 people capacity. This is the problem I have. Widening out for an audience and being in an empty stadium for the most part. You can fit 20,000 people, and I'm sure New York has the fever for some Guardians football, but also an empty stadium is not a good look for the XFL there. And the same thing that happens with Seattle, who's also playing in the NFL stadium and former the Ed Jones Dome in St. Louis. So where is the XFL going for that? Because I know those stadiums are not going to be full. What do you think the broadcast is going to be doing as far as showing who's in the audience?
That's a great point. I'm glad you brought that up because I thought the first game, the D.C. Defenders game, which was in D.C., they were playing with D.C. United, the soccer team plays, and that's, as you mentioned, a 20,000-seat stadium, and they had over 17,000 fans there. So that looked great. That was a great look on television because it looks full, it sounds full. It is a stadium that's more built to accommodate the number of fans that the XFL currently has. However, when they went to that second game in Houston where the University of Houston plays, you know, that stadium felt empty, a little dead, a little hollow. And I think if I were running the XFL, I, of course, I'd have my sights set on MetLife, CenturyLink, these, you know, 70,000, 80,000 seat stadiums and hope maybe one day I could fill those things. But right now, your product is going to look much better in a smaller stadium like that Audi Field in D.C. I think that is where the product is going to look best.
So can we add the L.A. Chargers to the XFL then at this point? I don't know.
Exactly.
But so we're speaking with Kevin Boylard here, writes for the NFL and really football for CBS Sports. Follow him on Twitter at 247. Kevin Boylard, and you mentioned how important the quarterback play is going to be. Just noticing from yesterday and with four more teams to see today, I worry in terms of the on-field product that could, you know, maybe portend some issues for the XFL, offensive line play, because there was a lot of times, at least specifically with Cardale Jones, that just he's running for his life. And especially if you have maybe iffy quarterback play to begin with, it's tough to find NFL quality linemen. So then to try and get this next level as well and needing so many of them, I worry that that could be something that might go for the layman, maybe a little under the radar is something that could really portend a big issue, especially once injuries start piling up.
That's definitely true. And if you look in the NFL, you know, the scarcest elite players are quarterback and offensive line. You could have enough talented wide receivers, enough talented defensive backs to field two full leagues, the NFL and the XFL, and you're always going to have run over. But there's going to be that cutoff somewhere when it comes to quality quarterbacks and quality offensive linemen. And you saw it in the running game. I don't think anyone in 50 yards rushing, no single player kind of dominated as a running back in this game. So maybe it'll have to be a passing league with quarterbacks like Cardale Jones, who took off as a runner a little bit and had 28 yards on the ground, or Philip Walker, who had 26 yards on the ground. If they could be the dual threat scrambling type quarterbacks, maybe that can help get the league far enough across where we're not looking at the offensive lines and going, wow, none of these teams can run the ball because they're just totally overmatched. So I think it's going to be a work in progress in the trenches for this league. And eventually it may come along, but overall I want to see a team that can really dominate on the ground before I'm just saying, hey, this is a quality, really good football product, well-rounded football product, before I say, you know, it's just a couple of star players or a couple of guys that look like, hey, they might belong in the NFL, which is what it is currently right now.
What I think and envision for the XFL, for it to be successful in the long run, is a partnership with the NFL. Now, I don't know if Vince McMahon in his heart of hearts wants that necessarily. What do you think Vince is thinking? Does he want to stay independent and be a de facto minor league, or actually, after a couple of years, sell out and be the NFL's official minor league system?
Well, I don't think there's anything wrong with aspiring to be the NFL's minor league, an official minor league for the NFL. I think that, if nothing else, the AAF and the XFL in just one day has proven that there's at least an appetite. Fans want more football, and the NFL is obviously the highest product. It's what everyone aspires to be, and in all of sports, everyone wants to be with the NFL. So for the XFL to model themselves after the NFL and to be potentially a minor league for the NFL is good. Now, you're right, Vince McMahon, there's no really ultimate goal is. Now, this league is never going to do what the USFL did, for example, and say, okay, look, we're strong enough, we're good enough, we've got a good following, we're moving to the fall, and we're going to compete head-to-head with the NFL. The XFL and Vince McMahon, I think, is smart enough to know that, hey, here's a market in the spring. We can dominate this. We'll never be the NFL, but if we can work, you know, in coordination with the NFL, that's not a bad thing. And if they have our, if they're supporting us, that's a good thing. You know, there's going to be a give and a take with any type of relationship like that. But overall, right now, the XFL has to be happy with the way day one went and the way the first weekend is projecting. And right now it looks like it could be a standalone league in time.
What rules do you think are realistic that the NFL could adopt? I'm not saying right away or anything, but, you know, in theory could try and adopt over the next few years. And the other thing is, I've been trying to figure out what the best strategy is on the point after score, whether to go for the 1, 2, or 3. Do you have a concrete thought on that yet?
I don't have a concrete thought on that just yet, but I am excited by it. That's probably my favorite rule change, is the extra point, how they have, you know, a 1, 2, and a 3, depending on the yardage that you go for it from. I think that's super exciting, adds a whole new element to the game. You know, there's a certain level of offensive execution that should become more important. You should have go-to, you know, 2-yard, 5-yard, 10-yard plays that can net you that point or that 2 or 3 points every single time. It's an emphasis on red zone offense. The NFL looks pretty dumb, frankly, thinking that, oh, let's make the extra point a 33-yard field goal try, and that'll generate some excitement in our fan base. No, that's silly compared to what the XFL is doing. And then also, I think the next best rule change that the XFL has made is the kickoff. That, it looks safer. Will it be safer? We got to see throughout the course of the season whether, you know, I saw one play yesterday that was a vicious head-to-head hit. No flag, no penalty, no independent concussion spotter stopping the play and taking a look at the player on a kickoff. So, you know, hits and big hits are still going to happen anytime you've got, you know, 200-pound athletes running full speed at each other on any given play. You know, you can shorten the distance at which they're running at each other, but the contact is still going to happen. So I'm not really fully believing that it's a safer play, but the way it's set up, there might be some seams in there that we may get more big plays, more big returns. We didn't see one yesterday, but I'll be curious to see if we make it through this season, we see more kick returns, because kick return touchdowns have been way down in the NFL ever since they started tinkering with that play, you know, 5-6 years ago.
The one thing I also think that there's going to be maybe a problem with in the future is the relaying of the calls. You see they're broadcasting the coach's call to the quarterback and the quarterback's call to the huddle. I think in the future, maybe coaches will have a guy or a girl who's watching the live broadcast and relaying those calls to either the coach or the players on the field themselves. Is there a safeguard against that? Does the XFL already got out in front of that? One of the texters said that, you know, since the teams are owned by the XFL in general, all the teams are owned by them, that will kind of stop that type of nonsense from happening.
Well, one of the things that I found interesting from that is that the play call is not just relayed into the quarterback's ear, but it's also into the skill position player's ear. So a lot of actually running backs, I think it was either Donnell Pumphrey or Jarrell Presley on the DC Defenders, or maybe it was Kenneth Farrow, I can't remember. It was one of the running backs in the early game said he actually didn't like it. He didn't like having the coach in his ear up until the snap.
I think it was Farrow.
Was it Farrow? Because it was he said, you know, distracting when he just wants to be, you know, playing naturally. So I wouldn't be surprised if maybe the XFL pulls back on some of these innovations as the season goes along and says, hey, you know, this wasn't a bad idea in this regard, but it's actually working against us in others. So maybe that was a little too ahead of its time. Maybe that was a little too innovative. We should pull back here and be more like the NFL or college football in this category or another category. And so I could see that this is a great experiment, the XFL. So some things are going to work, some things are going to be hits, and some things are going to be duds and fall on their faces. So that's just one example I could think of from yesterday that I heard some complaints about. But overall, I think, you know, as this league goes along, fans are excited by the things that are new and are different. And, you know, there are going to be others that will probably be tinkered with and changed.
Yeah, I didn't expect myself to enjoy, and maybe I think this is maybe more for the lower level league like the XFL, where they didn't have as much of a training camp or being able to really get to know each other, the timing rules and how essentially they use the rest of the half to still save time overall, but also buy themselves a little extra time in the final 2 minutes. I wasn't sure how I was going to feel about it, but watching the execution of it, it didn't bother me at all. Did it offend your sensibilities at all, or your overall thoughts on the timing rules and kind of letting the clock run before you hit that 2 minute mark and then having a little bit of extra time built in?
It didn't necessarily bother me yesterday. It's one of those rules where obviously when you look at the kickoff, you look at the 2-point conversion, that is like, you know, wildly different from the NFL. That's exciting and new. Those other rules that are kind of like, oh yeah, running clock here, you know, some differences with the 2 minute warning, that I think you're going to need multiple weeks of examples to see how that's going to impact everything. I don't think you can get a full, you know, breadth of what that rule is and how it's going to impact games and management of games late in the action until we see it implemented in, you know, a full week of action, first of all, or at least several weeks of action here, to know, okay, what do I do as a coach? As a fan, should I be hoping they call the timeout here or whatnot? I think we need to see more of those things in action before we can really draw an immediate, you know, the immediate reaction to that is probably, you know, we need more time, I think.
And I think myself, I watched yesterday kind of like how bad this is going to be. Like, oh, it's going to be terrible. And then I watched it. And I was like, all right, this product is actually not bad. I like what I'm seeing. And I stayed longer than I should have I had something else planned. And I stayed watching the XFL. How are they going to go off of this first great week? Well, the first two games were great. How do they plan on going from here? Because I remember the first XFL iteration had a great first week and then fell off the table. What do you think their plans are to make this a stable football league in the future?
If you also remember last year, the AAF got off to a really hot start. There was a ton of interest in it right when it started for that first week, and then it waned and waned and didn't even finish the season. So I think that the key is going to be the competition that you're going to be facing here soon. Soon you're going to have March Madness. You know, and then you're going to have NBA and NHL playoff races heating up. that's kind of when teams or fans tune out and start watching other sports. So it's got to be that overall hunger for football. And here's where I think, you know, the NFL, if they were ever to form a partnership, could generate some excitement for the XFL with the way that the NFL has taken over the offseason with free agency and draft coverage. If they could incorporate the XFL somehow into their offseason schedule and their and part of their excitement, that's where it could really help. The other thing, of course, is building the stars. The Cardale Joneses, the Philip Walkers of this league, they need to be built up and celebrated. I also think another thing that they did really well, social media. XFL was all over social media yesterday. Continuing that momentum through the spring will be key.
Kevin, really appreciate your time and enjoy following you on Twitter at 24/7 Kevin Boylard, and just watching all of us getting this XFL experience together, and excited to watch it today, especially with our guy, Mark Trussman. So have a good one, man.
All right. Catch you later. Thanks.
That's Kevin Boylard, 24/7 Kevin Boylard on Twitter. You can see his work on CBS Sports. So coming up at noon, it's going to be Hub Arkish and Anthony Herron. So we'll have transition with them a little bit later. I think we got maybe a couple stray XFL thoughts to want to get to. And I've got an NBA thing. Just kind of want to give everybody a reset after the trade deadline of where we're at. And, you know, let people speak about the NBA without it necessarily having to be about the Bulls. Because they're two different things to me. Bulls talk is one thing, and NBA talk is another. One is good, one's not so great at the moment. So,
only three games out of the playoff spot, Rick. Put some respect in the names.
Which is just ridiculous. Only the Bulls. Yeah. Yeah. I wonder if they could take that back now. Boy, how far that term has fallen.
Yeah, exactly.
Just from 20-plus years ago to now, that term is a bit rough. So he's Herb, I'm Rick. We're here with you till the top of the hour on The Score.
Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, Minnesota, I just want to thank you guys, man. This is a pleasure, a true pleasure. No, for real, though, man, just... You guys welcome me with open arms from the day one. You know, I've been feeling the love. Y'all got some talent around here now. We got a lot of work to do, but we're so excited. From the coaching staff, from the front office, to every player on the bench. We're going to play for you guys every night. We're going to need y'all support. We need y'all to be the loudest, the most hypest fans. Showed us from day one. It's the second half of the season, but we know we got a lot of work to do, so we're excited. So keep that going.
Got some talent now? Okay. The bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Does your youth hockey team want to play in front of thousands? Make it happen with the Chicago Wolves Youth Hockey Program presented by Kia. Visit chicagowolves.com/youth hockey to learn more. That was D'Angelo Russell addressing the Minnesota Timberwolves fan base as they surprisingly just stomped all over the Clippers last night. I guess when you hit like 26 three-pointers, that's bound to happen. But
problem solved. Wiggins was the problem.
Yeah, the only problem.
Even though
problem.
He went to Golden State and they got a dub.
Yeah, and he actually played well. He looked not half bad. And it's interesting that even though it's obvious that like the Clipper or the Warriors are just having a down year because of injuries and stuff, that it might be the worst team in the league this year, and they're talking about the winning culture, which I 100% understand, and he's not wrong. It's just odd.
Very odd. And I just... scared of that team next year when everybody gets right.
Yeah, that's going to be real interesting. So I kind of wanted to take a look at just give everybody kind of a reset on the NBA after the trade deadline. There weren't, that was the probably D'Angelo Russell moving to Minnesota, Andrew Wiggins out to Golden State. Probably the only huge move. And quite honestly, I don't want to say the Timberwolves took Golden State to the cleaners, but I think it's pretty close to that. Because if you look at the contract that Andrew Wiggins has for what he's been, you might have needed more than one solid first round pick just to get, just to unload that contract for nothing, more or less to get D'Angelo Russell back. So I tend to think there should have been at least another first round pick in there going to Golden State. But that, you know, for this year, it doesn't really matter because neither of those teams is good. That's a looking forward move. But as we look at what the NBA is right now, not the Bulls, we're not going to focus much on the Bulls at the moment. However, if you want your Bulls basketball in your life, good on you. You can catch pregame here on The Score at 4:45. Hub Arkush and Anthony Herron are here from when we, from when we're done at noon through 4:45, leading you up to Bulls pregame with David Schuster. The Bulls are in Philadelphia taking on the Sixers, and Joe Cowley's column this week about the Bulls maybe in the offseason should try and pry Joel Embiid, or at least a similar type move, get him away from the Sixers. But looking at where the NBA is right now, I, you know, have people on Twitter at RickCamp670. You can follow Herb at Ecknerwall23. Just asking, you know, who can actually win the title as we look at it? Because this year's build as open of a year as we've had in a long time, and I do think that's true. But as I look at it right now, even with what happened yesterday, to me, there are three teams that I definitely confidently say can win the NBA title. Both LA teams and the Bucks. I mean, is there anybody, Herb, that from, you know, what you've been able to see that tickles your fancy at all, whether it's just as an intriguing team or someone else that you think could maybe win the title?
I think you got all three of them right there. And then maybe on the periphery, the Heat, who got Andre Iguodala out of Memphis, and the players there in Memphis are happy with that because, you know, Andre was doing nothing. He wasn't wanting to be there, which wasn't his choice to be traded to Memphis, whatever.
Right.
By the way, Memphis, great last year. Fantastic in acquiring players and draft picks. I think they're going to be a team you should look out for in the future. Ja Morant, of course. Dylan Brooks, excellent. Just got a Justice Winslow from the Heat, young player. Just, they got a lot of youth there.
So you're saying that's a successful rebuild so far?
Yes. It's
interesting.
It's somebody actively looking to get their team better while, you know, getting rid of stars. Michael Conley could have stayed there. They're like, you know what? It's been real, Mike. You're not part of our future.
Right.
It's been real. Deuces. We'll hang your jersey up when you're done playing.
Yes.
And they've actively tried to get better on the fly. But the Heat, Jimmy Butler leads that team from a team that it was in obscurity to a team that's competing. They're fourth, I think, now in the East. Getting Andre Iguodala, a guy who's had there, been there, done that type of thing in the playoffs. Maybe not this year they're going to be title contenders because they still have a lot of rookies they're depending on.
Yeah.
And Tyler Hero, Chicago's finest, Kevin Nunn. But I think in Duncan Robinson also. But I think having Bam, having Jimmy, having the team that they have, Myers Leonard, pointing out for the Illini, they're going to be competing for the championship eventually, maybe not this year. So the Bucks are clear-cut favorites in the East.
Yes.
I think the Clippers overtook the Lakers with the trade for Marcus Morris Sr. And I hate to call him Marcus Morris Sr. because I don't know what his son is.
Right.
Probably a two-year-old kid. But Marcus Morris Sr. is now a Clipper, giving them even more toughness.
Yeah.
I mean, who's tougher than that team?
Well, and
who
more,
wants to run into that team in the playoffs?
More shooting, too. They need that extra shooting because you have Kawhi, who likes to operate in the mid-range a lot, and what makes it more palatable is, one, how good he is at it, and also that he can play make from there, too. Kawhi's never been, like, a great passer or great playmaker, but he's good enough, as you saw last year with Toronto, that if there's a solid enough cast around him, that he can absolutely make that work.
PG-13 as a backup, or the second player, the Robin,
right,
is amazing.
Yes, because that was his thing in Indiana when they got to the Eastern Conference Finals. Everybody's saying, well, Paul George isn't a number one guy, which generally I agree with, and especially considering his injury history too, I think that's more than fair. And as we look at it now, you know, the Clippers, I think it's very fair to say they are very blah on the regular season. They've rested a lot. Kawhi's rested a lot. Paul George coming back from the injury. Patrick Beverley's been hurt. There's been a couple games, like when they played in Chicago, that you had what? I think they had Paul George, and then everybody else that mattered was out. Lou Will was out. I think
Montrezl
Harrell might have been out. And Kawhi was definitely out. So Pat Beverley might have been out as well. So there's been very few instances of the Clippers being together, but that's kind of taking on the philosophy of your main player, which is Kawhi Leonard. And it's ruffled some feathers with a guy like Montrezl Harrell, who's kind of stated, hey, we got to care more about what's going on day to day. But
Kawhi knows that these regular season games don't matter.
Right. And the thing is, they're still, I would say, maybe not a majority, but definitely a plurality would say the Clippers are the favorite to win the title right now. I think they would win a plurality because there's enough people that would say Milwaukee because they have the easier walk to the finals, and some that would still say the Lakers. The teams that are intriguing outside of that, like one thing I want to look at is the rest of the East is kind of fascinating. At least the teams that are good, the 2 through 6, Toronto, Boston, Miami, Philly, Indiana, in that order, because right now Toronto is the 2 seed, which is kind of wild considering not only that Kawhi left, but the amount of injuries they've had.
Yeah, they've won 14 in a row to get to the 2 seed.
We talk about injuries in Chicago, and they happen every year. And boy, how can you evaluate anybody if there are injuries? But Kyle Lowry's missed time. Marcus Gasol's missing time now. And I understand it's a different type of team. Pascal Siakam's missed a lot. Pretty much everybody has missed time.
Real people.
Yes, real players. But you know what? When you have a good coach, and mind you, I think Nick Nurse has probably already graduated himself into the upper echelon in that top 5 to 7 coaches in the league conversation already.
And how about Masai Ujiri with the, I want to say balls, but you know.
You can
with,
say balls.
Okay, with the balls to trade or to fire his coach.
Right.
Who led him, Dwayne Casey led him to a certain point and realizing Dwayne Casey is an A to B. Yes. I need that C guy. And going with Nick Nurse, an unknown to the masses, but a known inside the NBA circles, more of a analytics guy, and going out and trading a fan favorite.
Mm-hmm.
DeMar DeRozan, get off my team. Kawhi, let's come on. Come on through. Yeah, we'll give you that load management time. But when it's playoff time, show up. And he showed up as the best player in the league that last offseason. Masai Ujiri, smart on him, not going to the Knicks, right. Not taking that 15 mil per and staying in Toronto. You got to have front office people that have a little gamble in them. And to bring it back to the Bulls, these guys have job security forever.
Right.
They should be gambling every single year for their team. They should be doing wild things because they know they're not getting fired. Mm-hmm. So to stay put and to stay with the same garbage team and the same excuses about Derrick Rose being hurt in 2012.
Right.
That's what makes me mad about the Bulls, and I know you didn't want to get back here, but
these
are the type of moves. Memphis Grizzlies, Toronto Raptors, small market teams doing real things to compete with the bigger teams like the LA Lakers and the Clippers.
Right. There's so many. It's just so obviously when you think about teams that started their rebuild either around the same time as the Bulls or maybe a shade after that are already further along, you would say as a team. Memphis is an obvious example. Dallas is an obvious example. OKC is an example. And the thing is, you can't say, well, you know, OKC was able to trade Paul George. Well, you know what? Sam Presti leveraged that perfectly to say, listen, I know you need Paul George to sign Kawhi Leonard, so I'm valuing both of them if you want to trade for Paul George. He did that properly. The Clippers were over the barrel on that. Now the Clippers are doing more than just fine right now,
mm-hmm.
but he leveraged that properly. You look at New Orleans, same principle. They knew that they had the Lakers over the barrel, and they had that type of player. The Bulls did not leverage themselves properly when they knew that Tibbs, who's an over, you know, coaches as executives, generally problematic, that proved to be true for Tibbs, they had him more over the barrel than they really wanted. Or then Minnesota wanted, and they leveraged it okay, maybe.
Yeah.
Really, it was honestly a bad trade, because if the number 16 pick that they gave Minnesota to move up nine spots doesn't turn into Justin Patton, who just wasn't ready for the NBA, and it turned into someone even decent, that trade looks even worse.
Exactly. And to speak to a team that might be on the same Bulls level, I like what the Knicks did.
Right.
Doing something different, hiring an agent and World Wide West, hiring Leon Rose and World Wide West to garner some type of differentness. Like, I know that James Dolan will be interfering into the what Leon Rose does, but it's different. They got a different front office. They'll have a different coach. They'll have a different feel to them, and not just staying put with the same people just because that's the way they've done it.
Yeah,
I just need them to move, to do something different. I need somebody to get mad, either Reinser, Michael, or Jerry, to do something. Damn friendships. I don't care if your wives are the best of friends. They could still be after you get fired. Right. Bye.
Yeah, I'm still not at the point where I would say the Knicks are a better organization than the Bulls, because even when the Knicks were successful, Donnie Walsh was there, and Donnie Walsh had the resume. He had built the Pacers. Well-respected guy in basketball circles. At the time that he was hired, that would have been considered as close to Masai Ujiri going there, not going to the Knicks now. And James Dolan still couldn't keep himself from meddling. So there's different versions. They're a team that goes through executives too much. The Bulls are ones that don't go through them enough. I'm still not going to say, until it's proven otherwise, that the Knicks are a better organization than the Bulls. However, they at least have an opportunity to trend that way, even though I don't think it's going to be there quite yet. So let's take our last time out. When we come back, we'll do some transition with Anthony Herron, with Hub Arkish. So we'll talk with them. They're going to be with you until 4:45. That's Bulls Sixers pregame. Go crazy, folks. Go crazy. And keep it tuned to 670 The Score.
They got pushed around, and they were out there on the field for quite a while.
Well, James, I'll tell you what kind of day this is going to be. I'm looking at the text line here at 67011. And the first one I see from a texter in the 309 area code, Hub Arkish is an idiot, blah, blah, blah. Made a huge living talking football. He's constantly wrong. Anyone can do postgame. Well, thanks.
There's no reason to hate on Hub. No. It's a good bowl, but there's no reason to hate on Hub. Welcome back. I'm Rick Camp alongside Herb Lawrence. And coming up from 12 to 4:45 is going to be Anthony Herron and the guy to our left right now, Hub Arkish. And that's leading into Bulls at Sixers pregame. So, yikes. Bulls at Sixers. Let's leave that alone.
Hey, man, I'm supposed to be supporting the brand here. It's the 670 The Score. It's going to be a great game. Philadelphia plays well at the house, and the Bulls are motivated to win the game. Tune in, Chuck and Bill.
Yeah, it'll be great broadcast no matter the result of
the game.
Play
the game, Rick. Come on.
Yes.
Can I ask a really dumb question?
Sure.
When is the All-Star game?
Next Sunday.
Okay, I thought it was last Sunday, then I thought it was this. I knew they wouldn't do it with the Super Bowl.
Right.
So I thought, all week long, I kept thinking it's this Sunday. And then I realized, looking at the schedule today, I guess it's not. So it's
In fairness, the Bulls players don't know when the All-Star game is either.
Right.
So, yeah.
I mean, Zach LaVine knows when the stuff the night before is. He's got to be in the three-point contest.
Boring. But, yeah, it's
it's fine.
The All-Star game is kind of anticlimactic. It's in the city of Chicago.
Yeah.
And, like you said, Hub, no one knows about it. And it's like, we're ramping up. I'm trying to get guests to come into studio this week for All-Star when everybody's going to be hyped up and having these parties. People are not, like, jazzed for the All-Star game being in their city for the first time in, like, 30, 40 years.
Well, that's because people are not jazzed by the Bulls. I mean, it's just, it's gotten depressing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, guys, I have a novel concept for both the NBA and the NHL. As someone who has not understood for the last two decades why they even play the Pro Bowl, and obviously it's different. It's the only one that is played after the season as opposed to baseball, hockey, and basketball. Mm-hmm. But all these gimmicks and all the shtick that they're coming up with for these games and the whole 3-on-3 and the NHL and everything, why not go the other way? Make it a real game. Make these guys play defense. Put your best team out there and have, you know, see who's better. I don't understand all this other, you know, messing around and crap.
I think that's what they're trying to do now in the NBA with this, like, new format this year. So it's essentially, there's a prize for whoever wins each of the first three quarters. And I believe that is $100,000 goes to local charities in the Chicagoland area, which is great. And then they take the total of the first three quarters, add 24, and that's the end score of the All-Star game.
I have a better idea for you.
Huh.
Give $1 million to the defensive player of the game.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, that's a great idea.
That would be fantastic.
League can afford it. You know, they're rolling in dough, you know, and just the broadcast rights to this game alone.
Right.
You would have 30 All-Stars out there competing for $1 million prize, and you'd have a real basketball game.
Yeah.
Think about how cool that would be. Same thing in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
You know, encourage them to play the game. I don't watch these things anymore. They're not worth
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's rough.
And for the snubs, the people who think they're snubs, I propose that you have a one-on-one tournament for the last five guys who think they're supposed to be All-Stars,
mm-hmm.
and you have them play one-on-one versus each other, and whoever wins that gets the All-Star spot. Guys would be balling out and then playing for some money for themselves. That would be a great Saturday night thing where Zach LaVine is cheered on by his people for a one-on-one game to seven, whatever it is.
Yeah.
It would incentivize the people saying, hey, I'm better than this individual person. Why is this guy in? Brad Beal saying, why is that guy over me? Then you call him out and you say, I call out this guy at the bottom end of the roster.
Yeah.
If I beat him, I take his All-Star spot. Bring drama, bring the defense that everybody wants, mm-hmm. and also an exciting game of one-on-one, which basketball mostly has devolved into.
That's cool. I like that. I mean, it definitely favors like guys that can handle the ball. So if it was, you know, Rudy Gobert versus I don't know who it would have to be, you'd be like, that would probably be rough for big guys, like traditional big guys, but I'd be here for it because pretty much everybody else would be in, and that just shows the skill set also of a lot of these guys.
I think, guys, the point is even us lowly radio waifs can figure out really decent ideas.
Yeah.
But Adam Silver and Gary Bettman, you know, can't get out of their own way. They come up with what I think is just this crap.
Yep.
You know, listen, 3-on-3 hockey is the concept is because it's wide open, it's more exciting.
Yeah.
No, not really. It's just a bunch of guys skating around. You know,
yeah,
it's not hockey.
Highlight of the NHL All-Star weekend was when they were doing the like accuracy, trying to get points.
Yeah, they hit plates and such.
Was when drunk Brett Hull went up there and just missed by a mile. Like he hit the puck, but that's about all he could claim off of it for one final shot.
But you got to love that Brett's doing his best to follow in his father's footsteps.
Isn't that the truth?
I'm just wondering, Hub, I know you and Anthony are going to get into it. Your initial thoughts of Rick and I love the XFL, what they brought yesterday. I just don't know how they're going to continue that excitement. What are your initial thoughts of the games that we saw yesterday?
There absolutely is a place for it, mm-hmm. and I would argue a need for it. Now, what this is really going to come down to is I'm going to guess, and I only watched one game yesterday.
Sure.
I got to watch the DC-Seattle game, and then I had to go to the honey-do list. And so, I'm going to watch more. We'll have it on in here today. I'm going to guess it's somewhere between 10% and 15% of these kids can play in the NFL. Now, whether that's the mm-hmm. bottom of the roster, you actually find some players, who knows, okay? So now you've got the other 85% of the guys on the field. I still enjoyed it because, to me, it was like a good college football game.
Yeah.
I mm-hmm. thought Herb made a huge point. I was listening to you guys on the way down. I also enjoyed it because it was in a 20,000-seat soccer stadium. Those people were going crazy. And now today you're going to see a cavernous MetLife Stadium, and you're going to get back to the old problems of the new leagues. So, but at the end of the day, guys, I think what it's going to come down to is once we've gotten used to this as a feeder league, and once we're focused on the 10%, can they make enough money to support the rest of them and the mm-hmm. league? Because that's always been the issue. They're going to do much better than the AAF because Vince McMahon is a brilliant businessman. Say what you want about wrestling or whatever. The guy is a known quantity, okay?
Yes.
So they're properly financed. These TV contracts are huge. But at some point, and it's probably going to be by late March or early April, it's not going to be that exciting looking for the 10% anymore. You know, it's not the NFL. So can they support it? Can they raise enough revenue? What I'd love to know is what these TV contracts look like. I don't know mm-hmm. if they're actually getting serious money from them or not. But guys, at the end of the day, it's always coming down to the same thing. Can you make money at it? That's going to be the key.
I'm sure the numbers Absolutely. Were ridiculous for yesterday's games. And can they keep it up?
Well, you know, listen, to me, it's inexcusable that they still play the Pro Bowl because it's just such hot garbage. But ESPN gets these ratings, you know, and as long as people turn it on, they're going to play it. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, what will these ratings look like? Will people stick with this? And what's going to happen late March, early April, if the weather gets nice? You know, we'll see. It'll be interesting.
Bob, thank you. Have a good show. Herb, it's been fun.
It has been fun. And you guys stay tuned for Hub Arkish and Anthony Heron, both here until 4:45, leading you into Bulls pregame. And it's been an enjoyable time to have a conversation with you for 3 hours.
Absolutely. All right. Hub and Anthony are next. This is The Score.
Oh, gosh. You know, I'm not much on speeches, but it's so gratifying to leave you wallowing in the mess you've made. You're screwed. Thank you. Bye.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.